Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Dr. Lori Marino. Thanks for being with us, Lori.
Thanks for having me.
Lori, can you tell us how you got involved in animal issues and veganism?
Well, I wasn't always a vegan. I grew up in an Italian family where there were several butchers, and we had meat all the time. And so for me, it was a gradual realization of what it means to eat meat and what happens to the animals. And I did that in stages, and I have been vegan now for many, many years, and I'm quite happy to be. I realize you don't need to eat meat to be healthy and happy. But as far as animal issues in general, I guess I've always been interested in what it would be like to be another animal, and I've always had a sensitivity towards their phenomenology or what is their experience. And that's what got me into studying the neuroscience and the psychobiology of other animals. And I've done that for the past 25 years, and I've done that non-invasively.
You know, I was impressed to read that one of your contributions was to be one of the lead authors of the study of the mirroring effect in dolphins. Can you tell us more about what that really means, that a dolphin can recognize itself?
Sure. In 2001, Diana Reese and I published a study that showed that bottlenose dolphins can recognize themselves in mirrors. And when you wake up in the morning and you recognize yourself in a mirror, that
I often
might not
don't
seem like a great cognitive feat, but it really is, because it shows that you have a sense of self and you're using the mirror as a tool to investigate yourself. And that is something that not all animals do. In fact, humans don't reliably do that until they're about 2.5 years of age. So it represents achieving a certain level of self-awareness. And up to that point, only great apes had shown this ability. When we did our study, we found that bottlenose dolphins are also capable of recognizing themselves in mirrors. And that has been followed by elephants and even magpies, birds. So, but it's still a quite rare capacity in the animal kingdom.
As far as we know, at least, right?
Right.
How do you determine if an animal recognizes himself in a mirror?
Well, you know, what something looks like isn't always what it is, so you really have to be careful to make sure that you have a setup that allows you to dismiss alternative explanations. So sometimes an animal might look like he or she is looking at himself in the mirror, but actually thinks it's another cat or dog. So you really have to do a lot of really important controls. It took us over a year to do the study, to come up with all of the data to make sure that we could conclude that these dolphins were recognizing themselves in mirrors. It doesn't mean that if an animal doesn't recognize themselves in mirrors, it doesn't mean that they aren't self-aware. It just means that, you know, there's something about recognizing yourself in a mirror that has something to do with a very similar level of self-awareness that humans have.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Are there any studies about whether they can recognize themselves in video or photographs?
Yes, yes. And those animals that recognize themselves in mirrors tend to be the ones who recognize themselves in photographs and videos as well. So it doesn't seem to be specific to the mirror. It really doesn't have anything to do with the mirror. It has something to do with the kind of self-awareness that that individual takes to the situation. Yeah, so chimpanzees, for instance, recognize themselves in photographs and videos as well as in mirrors.
And Lori, so you're executive director of the Camela Center for Animal Advocacy. What kind of work do you do?
Well, the kind of work we do is bringing science and data and expertise to animal advocacy issues. So we do a lot of scientific research. We do a lot of data-based advocacy. And the whole point of developing the Camela Center was to bring science and advocacy for animals together. So these are two areas that, you know, traditionally they've been kept apart and been really students for a long time have been told, well, you can't be an animal advocate and you can't and a scientist at the same time. Right. And I taught for 20 years at Emory University, and that's just not true. You can be an animal advocate and a scientist at the same time, and in fact, being a scientist makes you a really effective animal advocate.
Yeah, right.
But it is still a pretty commonly held belief. I'm a biology professor here at our university, and students often make comments about we have to have, you know, typical invasive animal research or we won't be able to solve all of these diseases and we won't be able to understand how the brain works or something like that if we don't do invasive processes.
Right. Yes. Well, that is something that, you know, is a claim that universities make. And it is true that there are some kinds of questions that can only be answered doing invasive research. But that doesn't mean that those questions are necessary to answer. There
right.
will always be questions for which we don't have the answer, and one has to decide whether it's really worth it. I've been studying the neuroscience and the brain evolution and brain size and brain neuroanatomy in dolphins and whales for 25 years, and I've done it non-invasively, and I've discovered quite a lot of really neat things. So you can be a neuroscientist and do non-invasive research for sure.
I did some graduate work in psychology, and I found that primate studies in psychology gave me a greater appreciation for animals and probably, you know, led to my vegan path.
Yeah, I think that when you start to do research with these animals, many of us get to know them as individuals, get to know them as beings and not just systems that they're working with. And once you make that switch and you realize that, it's difficult to unknow that. And I think everyone who, like myself, started out in neuroscience and engaged in invasive research with animals, I worked in a rat lab when I was in college, et cetera, once you start to sympathize and realize that these are living beings, it's really difficult to continue that work and, you move on to something else.
I did research on humans, but unfortunately it didn't give me a greater appreciation for them.
Well, that's another issue.
You weren't studying the right humans, apparently. So in light of all your many years of research, you know, what are your feelings on how whales and dolphins are kept in captivity and in these entertainment realms? How do you feel about their needs and whether they're being met?
Well, you know what? When people ask me that, I always say it doesn't matter what I feel about it and what my opinion is, because the science, the data is so overwhelming that, you know, my opinion is really, you know, not is moot at this point. The science tells us that these animals, dolphins and whales, cannot thrive in concrete tanks and theme parks and aquariums. They really just cannot, and there's no way to fit that square peg into that round hole. So it really is not even a matter of opinion, even though aquariums and theme parks would like you to think that there's still a debate, there really isn't.
It's kind of like there was a Colbert show about that. It was a climate change and how it was they were making fun of all the climate change deniers in the debates, as it was always one scientist on one side versus one side on the other. But they did a little visual demonstration and actually had like 99 scientists on one side and then one scientist on the other trying to argue versus for and against climate change.
That's right. It's very much like that. The data speak. It doesn't matter who thinks what or what anyone's feelings or opinions are. The data speak for themselves, and the data tell us that these animals just cannot live well in theme parks and aquaria.
Right. Was this part of your inspiration for being involved in this recently formed Whale Sanctuary Project?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we formed the Whale Sanctuary Project in order to build seaside sanctuaries for dolphins and whales who are formerly captive, as well as those who need rehabilitation in the wild. But it is an answer to a problem, and the problem is how orcas and beluga whales, as well as other cetaceans, live in theme parks and aquaria. And so the answer is that there's an alternative, and the alternative is to move them out of these places where they cannot thrive into a situation where their welfare is greatly enhanced, and they can and they do have the opportunity to thrive, and those are seaside sanctuaries. Most of the orcas and beluga whales and dolphins that live in places like SeaWorld right now cannot just be dumped into the ocean because they don't have the skills to survive.
Right.
But there is an alternative, and that alternative is seaside sanctuaries.
How large are these sanctuaries? I mean, they must be huge.
Well, again, I think the whole point of a sanctuary is to try to provide for those animals what they've been missing and what has been taken away from them living in theme parks and aquariums and concrete tanks, and that is a lot of space. And just how much space? Well, the answer is as much space as you can give them and still do it. No matter how much space you give an, you know, the dolphin or the orca, it's never going to be the same as in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what people have to understand is that it will be orders of magnitude greater than anything that they have in SeaWorld or any of these other commercial ventures.
Well, and then they'll also have not only more space, but more interaction and more other members of their community present.
They'll have a more natural environment,
yeah.
And it's the environment that they evolved to survive in and to thrive in, actually. They'll have a dynamic environment. They'll have the opportunity to feel the ocean and come in contact with the various living beings in the ocean, and the sort of the range of stimulation that they'll get is just so much greater than in a concrete tank. And they will not be imposed upon. They won't be asked to do stupid pet tricks for food, and that's really important.
Are you hopeful that SeaWorld will retire some of their orcas to the sanctuary?
Oh, gosh, we are. We're hopeful. SeaWorld made a big announcement a couple of months ago, and that was a good thing, but it didn't go far enough, and they know that. And so we're hopeful that at some point they will come to the table and sit and talk with us about how we can shift over to a better way, to a better life for these animals. And, yeah, we're not an anti-SeaWorld organization. The Whale Sanctuary Project wants to help that industry to shift to a model that I think is going to be more successful for the animals as well as them.
Right. And there was an interesting development out of Baltimore, right, recently with the aquarium there was talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what transpired there?
Well, the John Racanelli, the CEO of the National Aquarium in Baltimore, made the announcement just a couple of days ago that they would be building a sanctuary in the sea for 8 dolphins that they currently have. They've stopped all the dolphin shows, and now they're moving the dolphins by the end of 2020 to a seaside sanctuary where they will be able to experience the ocean for the first time. That's a huge announcement because it comes straight out of the industry. It's the same industry that SeaWorld and the Georgia Aquarium and Shedd Aquarium and Marine, you know, all of these other facilities are in. And it shows them that there is a different way to be, and I hope that they follow suit.
Right. Yeah, it's a neat development. It sounds, and especially with similar to the work that you all are doing, it sounds like it's a great initiative, but a myriad of issues to address. So, how do you even begin to try and identify, you know, where to have the sanctuary? And I know you're still in the sort of, you know, first year of operation, but it seems incredibly complicated.
It is complicated. It's not as simple as just finding a quiet cove and throwing a badminton net across it. It is much more complicated than that. And the first thing you do is you build a team of people who know how to do this, a team of scientists, veterinarians, engineers, trainers, including people who know how to sustain this and fundraise for this. It's a multidisciplinary team. And when you build the best team, you have the best opportunity of success. And with the Whale Sanctuary Project, I believe that we have the very best team in the world to do this. And people who are knowledgeable, experienced, and we will do this according to best scientific practices. It's complicated, but it is certainly doable.
Part of the plan is to have an educational component, and will there be an opportunity for that, for people to see animals in a healthier environment?
Absolutely. People will be able to see the animals, but in a much less intrusive way. And there will be an educational outreach facility where we can present authentic information about who these animals are and why they need to live in the ocean. And that's something that you can't do if you're at a place like SeaWorld, where you have an agenda, where you have to convince people that the concrete tank is the proper habitat for an orca.
Right.
We don't have that, so we can really be truthful and educate people about who these animals are. I'm really excited about that because we're going to use state-of-the-art, technological, cutting-edge types of media to do that. And people will be able to feel a connection with the animals, but the real animals. And that's will make the difference, I think.
Yeah, a lot of zoos and aquariums tout themselves as educational, but it's beginning to be realized that that's not the case. You can't learn from an animal in a cage.
No, and there's absolutely no evidence that visiting zoos and aquariums are in and of themselves educational or contribute to conservation. And I've done a lot of research in this area and published on it with a number of colleagues, and I can tell you that it's still a claim in search of evidence. There's just no evidence for that.
That's interesting because, I mean, that is one of the major reasons that people justify zoos is that,
exactly.
And people see the animals, they'll relate to them, and then they'll join World Wildlife Federation and help.
Yeah, it just doesn't work that way. It's more of a day and afternoon of entertainment, and, you know, they
move
forget
on
after that. So, you know, when you think about it, look at how many decades we've had elephants in zoos. And elephants are highly endangered. And I could repeat the same kind of problem with, you know, big cats and primates. The fact is we're in a sixth mass extinction event right now, and hundreds of millions of people around the world have visited zoos and aquariums. So the model doesn't work. It clearly doesn't work.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd much rather watch, you know, the Planet Earth series or something on TV where I actually get to see the animal.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. You know, in a natural setting, not really knowing that they're being videotaped, or if they are, they don't care about it. But, you know, when you actually get to see them up close and personal and doing their natural behavior, it's just so much more enjoyable than watching them hide behind a rock on a hot day in the desert.
I mean, whether or not that actually contributes to conservation, I mean, it's still a question, but at least it's not the kind of situation where you're sacrificing the lives of individuals in the service of a claim that for which there's no support.
Right. Lori, can you tell our listeners where they go to learn more about your work?
Yes. The Whale Sanctuary Project is up on Facebook. We have a website at www.whalesanctuaryproject.org, and you can go there. You can sign up for a monthly newsletter. You can get all kinds of updates. You can look at who's on the team. If you'd like, you can donate. And so I invite everyone to join the conversation and to get involved.
We've been talking with neuroscientist Dr. Lori Marino. Thanks for being with us, Lori.
Thank you so much for having me.